Welcome to RadioLaurier.com. We interrupt for some special programming. My name is Safina Hussein. I'm the Cord's news director, and today we have Lindsay Shepherd here with us to talk about some recent events going on at Laurier. Thanks for joining us, Lindsay.
Yeah, no problem.
If you have any questions, please tweet us at Radio Laurier, at the Cord, or to hashtag Laurier Asks Lindsay. So Lindsay is a teaching assistant in two first-year communication in context tutorials. Several weeks ago, Lindsay showed a TVO clip of a Jordan Peterson debate in her tutorials. In the clip, Jordan Peterson, who is a psychology professor at the University of Toronto, publicized his views, which criticizes the use of gender-neutral pronouns such as they, ze, or zare. On the other side of the debate, which Lindsay showed in her class, was Nicholas Matzfus, who is also a lecturer at the University of Toronto. He argued that language affects the dignity of trans people and that Jordan Peterson was not acknowledging that. Concerns regarding this decision were brought forth to Shepherd's supervising professor, Nathan Rambucana, who, along with two others from Laurier's administration, condemned her for presenting Peterson's views from a neutral standpoint. Lindsay, however, recorded the meeting she had with the three individuals, which was released in the media just over a week ago. The individuals present told her that she had violated Laurier's gender and sexual violence policy and had created a toxic climate. So Lindsay, since we had first talked almost 3 weeks ago when the incident was first becoming known, what are some of the biggest aspects that have changed for you? What's different for you now regarding this situation?
I'm getting a lot more support, and it's really amazing, actually. I get so many emails, so many comments on Twitter, and it has made me realize how many people are behind me, and it's really encouraging because if we want Canadian universities to embrace free expression, then we need to keep the pressure on Laurier because this is going to set the precedent.
So since all of this has happened, Laurier's president, Deborah McLatchy, released an official apology to you. This was last week. In her apology, she stated that the conversation she heard in the recording of the meeting released does not reflect the values and practices to which Laurier aspires. What were your thoughts on her apology?
Yeah, so unfortunately, she was focusing on the way the meeting was carried out rather than the content of the meeting. A lot of people have been saying, like, I was bullied in that meeting, or it was intellectual abuse, and it was Orwellian, it was Kafkaesque, right? But sure, you can talk about how the meeting was carried out, but we still can't ignore what was said in that meeting. And what was said is that, you know, we have to contextualize, you know, quote unquote, contextualize material for students so that they don't diverge from the thinking that we want them to have.
And since McLatchy's apology, she did mention in the note that she would be reaching out to you personally. Has that happened yet?
Yes, her secretary emailed me with some dates to meet, but I replied and said I couldn't make those dates, so I'm just still waiting.
Okay, so there will be something in the near future then.
Possibly. The email from the secretary on behalf of the Office of the President, it was very vague. Again, this is kind of just their theme of how they communicate with me, is just ambiguous, vague, no details, no specifics, just it could be anything. So it was just like, would you like to come meet? Well, and so I asked in my email, I said, why? Like, I said it respectfully. She's the president of the university. But I said, you know, can you let me know what the purpose of the meeting is? What are we going to be talking about? So,
and if you do meet with her, what do you hope to come out of a conversation with her?
Hard for me to know when I don't even know what the meeting is about, to be honest.
For sure. So since the situation was publicized, a lot of people have been receiving a lot of backlash, including your supervising professor, Nathan Rambucana. McLatchy mentioned this in her apology. She said, I remain troubled by the way faculty, staff, and students involved in this situation have been targeted. So what are your views on the hate and the backlash that others have experienced as a result?
Are you talking specifically about Professor Nathan Rambucana? Or?
Yeah, and Adria Joel as well, some of the individuals present in your meeting.
Well, the thing is, when administration doesn't take matters into their own hands and they let people off, the public gets outraged and the public take it into their own hands to express their anger. And I'm not saying that justifies, you know, and as far as I'm concerned, there has been no physical threat. I've read thousands of comments, and there's been no physical threat to any of those three. But people are still mad that this happened, and nothing really will change for them other than perhaps the results of when you Google search them.
So in Nathan Rambukana's open letter to you, he states that the issues are too complex to leave as a binary with protection of students on one side and protection of speech on the other. How do you respond, and do you view this as binary?
That was kind of a line in the letter that didn't even really register with me. It's not that complex. It's not complex because universities are places where you learn, and learning can be uncomfortable. And it's far more comfortable to be around people who constantly tell you you're right, and you already know everything. So it's not complex that a university is somewhere where you need to be challenged.
Okay, and how would you define free speech for yourself personally?
I mean, you know, in this case, it wasn't even a typical free speech case because I wasn't even expressing my own opinion. This was simply about showing a debate, as you said, you know, on TVO, The Agenda with Steve Paikin, a moderate, great show. And to think that you can't show two sides of a debate in a classroom is very wrong. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what about hate speech? How would you define that?
I'd have to look at, you know, legal documents relating to what hate speech is, but, you know, something I personally wouldn't tolerate would be, you know, a physical threat. And so, you know, and like I mentioned, I haven't seen that. I haven't seen any mention of, you know, physical harm to anybody.
So let's go over to Twitter. There's a few questions waiting for us there. First one is, was part of the tutorial meant to touch on the subject of pronouns? I mean, is it in line with the course syllabus, or was it a total blindside? If the student knew the syllabus talked about gender pronouns, why did they proceed with the class, and who makes the syllabus?
Well, the thing is, so this goes into the logistics of the course. So Nathan Rambukana teaches the content of Communication Studies 101, and it's, you know, about media. But the tutorials, because this is a 101 course, a lot of it has to do with improving their language skills. It is in the syllabus that they have to buy a book called The Little Pearson Handbook, which has stuff like punctuation, grammar, mechanics, language use, style. But, I mean, you can't put everything in the syllabus. And, of course, there's going to be discussion that arises in classes that you cannot foresee on a syllabus. And so this was a tutorial about grammar, and there was indeed a section about gender and pronouns and gendered language in the Little Pearson book.
Okay. Has anyone at all in the communications department shown you support?
No. And what's kind of interesting is there was a letter that I just saw last night, and it's an open letter from, I think, the Faculty Association, and I think there's about, it was something like 57 or 59 signatories, and 9 of those were communication studies professors. And so this letter was basically saying that inclusivity, equity, diversity, you know, those kind of buzzwords, kind of trump intellectual development, right? So I saw that there are, according to the Communication Studies faculty website, there is 18 professors in that faculty, 9 of which signed the letter, and that's not even including Herbert Pimlott, Nathan Rambukana, Peter Urquhart, who is the chair of the department, who was one of the people who sat at the back of one of my tutorials and took notes. So, you know, now we're at 12 out of 18 who are not showing support for me, and, you know, they're in direct non-support of me is what I mean. And one of the communication faculty members is also a professor in my course, so I doubt she would sign it, because that would be kind of like a conflict of interest or something. So the communication faculty has been the least supportive of me, and, you know, to be expected. I mean, it's their colleagues who are under fire, and sometimes when your colleagues are under fire, you are too cowardly to stand up to them.
So I'll take a small break from Twitter. If anyone else has any questions, we're still accepting them. Tweet at the cord, at Laurier, or at Radio Laurier, or hashtag Laurier asks Lindsay. So my next question for you, Lindsay, is in her apology, President McClatchy mentioned that the university was both hiring a third independent party to gather and assess facts in order to create a review of processes on how to move forward. As well, she mentioned a task force to further look into Laurier's commitment to abiding by principles of free speech while also respecting important human rights. What do you think of this?
So it's a way to shift responsibility and kind of kick the can down the road. So by that, I mean, I believe it was the results of the task force that are not going to be available until March. So they're just waiting for people to move on to the next news story, or at least that's what they're hoping will happen. So like I said, that's why it's important to keep this relevant, because it's so important, because this is where people go and, you know, their ideas are formed for the rest of their lives, right? So it's unfortunate that we've come to the point where these universities have kind of become politically correct credential factories. And so the student, you know, the customer is always right. So if they're brought up in an environment where they're coddled and they're comforted and they come to expect that treatment, and they come to expect that if they are ever uncomfortable, it is wrong, then the university doesn't want to alienate them, they want their money. So it's just the way it's going to carry on, unless we kind of promote a cultural change away from this insulation of young adults.
So since the situation has continued to grow and has made international headlines in the past week or so, President McClatchy released another statement in the form of video this past Friday. In the video, McClatchy said that free speech is core to Laurier's values and reiterated that the university has been committed to freedom of expression for over 100 years. And she said she was shocked after hearing the recording. What are your thoughts on the video that was released?
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious that they're not committed to freedom of expression. And if they were, their response to all this would have been quick and easy, really. But I mean, you can tell by the way they were hiding from the media and kind of speaking in a double speak that they really like don't know what they have to do. I think they're very confused and embarrassed, and they're not committed to freedom of expression. And what was the second part of the statement that you said?
She just reiterated that Laurier's values has been committed to freedom of expression for over 100 years, and that she was shocked after hearing the recording.
Yeah, it's, of course, a lot of people have been saying it's so good that this was recorded, because otherwise, who knows where this would be right now, and we wouldn't be even having this discussion, and a lot of people wouldn't be aware of how this issue runs deep in Canadian universities.
In our last interview, you mentioned to me that you've been receiving a lot of support and messages from Laurier alumni who have stated that they're really disappointed in the way that Laurier has handled the situation and have mentioned withdrawing donations. Are you still receiving similar message? And what are these alumni saying they're most disappointed about?
Yes, I still get messages from alumni saying they're going to pull donations, and even just from people saying they are going to not let their child enroll at Laurier, basically. What was the second part of your question?
What are these alumni saying that they're most disappointed about?
They're disappointed that it's a total attack on critical thinking, and they, you know, people send their kids to university so that the kids, and like I'm talking more about arts and humanities and social sciences programs, right, where you can argue that the key skill that you will get from it is critical thinking skills, the ability to, you know, deal with information and reconcile information, come to conclusions. And so if you've now become some sort of institute of an ideological agenda, then you're not performing the duty of a university anymore. And they should be renamed to, like, the Institute for Leftist Indoctrination or something.
So we'll take another break to answer some questions from Twitter. The first one I have here, do you think Adria Joel and Herbert Pimlott believe they did nothing wrong? If the president of Laurier actually believes that the conversation she heard does not reflect the values and practices to which Laurier aspires, should the three be subject to any disciplinary actions?
So for the disciplinary action, it's honestly hard for me to answer that, because I don't even know what that would look like. I've stated before in other interviews that, you know, I'm not looking for, like, blood, and I don't want them to be fired and have their lives ruined, because I don't think that's, you know, productive. And so as for Adria Joel and Herbert Pimlott, yes, it is very strange to me that they got out of this without having to provide an apology. I don't know why it would be only Professor Nathan Rambukkana who has to provide one. Very strange. I guess that's just a conversation they had behind closed doors, but, you know, they can't just get off and put all the blame on Rambukkana. They were there too. In the audio, they were making arguments against me too. And so they should really come out of hiding and make some sort of statement.
Okay. Next one I have here is, please ask Lindsay, has any trans or genderqueer person of Laurier come forward and stated understanding of her being court-martialed was the wrong way to go? She's a TA who tried to neutrally present English pronouns and that there is a debate with contentions regarding these pronouns.
So is their question...
Their question is, has any trans or genderqueer person of Laurier come forward and stated that the conversation that they had with you was wrong?
No.
Okay.
Oh, I mean, there was one person at my rally, or not my rally, but the free speech rally where I made a brief address on Friday, and they held a sign, and I think it said, "This tranny hearts free speech," and I didn't get to talk to that individual in person, but I really appreciate that they got past this binary that the Rainbow Center is trying to create, where you can only have one or the other. And so I really appreciate that this individual saw outside of that and came to support me.
So taking a break from Twitter and kind of continuing on from the trans view, many trans and non-binary folks have felt upset since McGlatchy released her public apology. The Laurier Rainbow Center posted a sign on their window right after which read, "Trans people deserve an apology." So many trans and non-binary folk have said that the apology has essentially silenced their voices, including the person or people who complained from your tutorial. What do you think about this?
It's unfortunately an overreaction, because this, let's just go back to the very beginning of this whole story. This is about a TVO clip that aired on a public broadcaster on The Agenda with Steve Paikin, and there are people who have much more extreme views than Jordan Peterson does, much more hateful. He's not even particularly hateful about it. And so what, I don't know their goal in singling me out as someone who needs to apologize to them. I don't know why they think I need to be some sort of protector and make sure that they are shielded from ideas. It really doesn't make sense to me. And I think, you know, from what I've seen on social media, they're actually alienating a lot of of the LGBTQ community, because those individuals don't feel like they need to be coddled. And so when some place like the Rainbow Center is claiming that they speak for all LGBTQ community members on this campus, at least, you know, it's kind of offensive and insulting that, you know, they're suggesting that trans people are in particular need of coddling or something. I know that would offend me.
Okay, so individuals from the Laurier Rainbow Center have explained that they feel that the debate that's going on between free speech and trans rights is unfair, and that it cannot be neutral because of the inherent power dynamics. In some interviews, individuals have stated that this debate fundamentally asks trans and non-binary people to defend their reality and their identity. Do you agree that the debate, which has stemmed from your situation, causes this type of harm?
No. And again, like, it was a debate I showed in class that aired on a public broadcaster. Why would it be different in a classroom? Why would it be different that you can't show that in a classroom? It does have to do with the university being a place where people expect things now. They expect to be treated with protection. So,
and for someone who might have to engage with justifying their identity as a result of something small like watching a Jordan Peterson video, what kind of harm might they experience for having to justify who they are and their reality?
I mean, first you have to agree with the premise that watching a video can threaten your existence, especially a very moderate video like the one I showed. And secondly, what was the part of your question?
So if someone watching a Jordan Peterson video who states that pronouns such as they are invalid, engaging with that, they would have to then justify their identity or their struggled reality. What kind of harm might they experience having to engage with something like that?
Sure. I'll also just clarify that Professor Jordan Peterson is against the compelled use of pronouns, but not the overall use of pronouns, just to clarify that.
For sure.
And as for harm, it's, again, I believe I was asked that in my kangaroo court meeting with Rambukana, Pimwat, and Joel, is how would I feel if I was a trans person? And I mean, you can't really answer a question like that. I don't know who they are as individuals. I don't know. I have no idea what it's like. But that being said, we all have parts of our identity that are subject to criticism by some parties. And so you just have to be resilient and, you know, fight back, be confident in yourself.
Okay, how have things changed since you got social media? In our first conversation, you mentioned that you weren't on many forms of social media. So what encouraged you to get Twitter?
What encouraged me is I wanted to be able to answer to things directly and comment on things directly. And, you know, I wanted to be transparent. And I think, you know, it's really interesting because Professor Rambukana shut down his Twitter. Herbert Pimlott put his on private. Adria Joel's nowhere to be found because that's her strategy. And, you know, I open a Twitter. And it just shows the dynamic of who's open about this and who's cowering away.
Okay, so within a short amount of time of you getting a Twitter account, your number of followers blew up. How has social media furthered the conversation surrounding your situation?
I mean, it certainly made me realize that more people believe in this issue than I ever could have imagined, for sure. And it really is, you know, you can consider people like the more extreme, more radical people of the Rainbow Center as a vocal minority, whereas the following I have is more of a silent majority. And, you know, yes, that kind of invokes the language of Trump, but it is fitting in this situation. And, you know, there's also more people, because, you know, this isn't just about Laurier, right? This is about a whole epidemic of political correctness that stifles people and makes them feel like they can't talk and makes them feel like they have to self-censor for fear of offending someone just a tiny bit. And so there's probably even people who don't even feel comfortable maybe following me on Twitter, right? Because of the climate. So I know that there's probably even so many more who feel so silenced that they won't even, you know, retweet something from me.
Okay, so how has your relationship with your supervising professor, Nathan Rambukkana, been since this all happened?
Well, the thing is, you have to realize we didn't really interact anyways. He has 8 TAs. There's 8 of us. It's a class of 350. He doesn't do any of the marking. It's all us. So it's not like we ever really see him. I think, you know, now it's November 27th. So since September, we've had 2 meetings, I believe, with everyone. And, you know, otherwise, maybe it's just a few emails here and there. So to be honest, as for our in-person and online interactions, nothing has really changed.
Okay. And how have your tutorials been since the events happened? Have the students in your class been eager to speak on what's going on?
Some of them have been, yep. And some of them have also sent me emails saying that, you know, they can't believe what is happening and they support me 100%. And that really means a lot to me because those are the people who are actually there. So as you know, as much as I love hearing from the general public, of course the students are, it's special to hear from them because they were actually in that room. And so they can kind of confirm that, like, okay, I'm not crazy. Like, this was really just a benign video and one person or maybe 2 or 3 people took potential offense to this. Whereas the rest of them, you know, I got comments like this was like the best class of the year. This was so interesting and I looked more into it when I got home. Or like I discussed this with my parents and friends. And it's like, that's what learning is, right? And that's how you engage people, is you make them think more deeply about things.
Okay, great. So we have a few more questions on Twitter. I have one here. I know she initially disagreed with Peterson's argument. How has the response to her actions changed her opinion of this position?
I guess that's referring to Bill C-16, which I'm still unclear about. I mean, there's been some articles written, at least one in the National Post, that said it's ridiculous to think that I violated it. But I think I read another that said it's actually ambiguous whether or not I violated it. But just the fact, yes, that Professor Rambukkana mentioned that I had violated it, or, you know, making arguments that I was making were counter to Bill C-16. That's worrisome. But I think Peterson and I are on the same page that, like, if a student asked to be called something, you know, you would just do it. But it's kind of the legal aspect that is touchy.
Okay. Another one here. What can Wilfrid Laurier do to better protect academic freedom and preserve the concepts of neutrality, debate, and discussion?
Yeah, so on Friday, myself and some of the organizers from the free speech rally, we presented a document to the president's office, and there's also a petition online, and it has to do with adopting the Chicago Principles. So for those who are not familiar, this is a statement at the University of Chicago. They started it, but some other American universities have followed suit, that says, you know, they don't believe in trigger warnings, safe spaces, and being potentially offended is not enough to shut down a discussion on a topic. So, you know, as for the future, I think that's the policy way to go. And then, as I already mentioned, the cultural way to go is to acknowledge that learning can be uncomfortable, and that's okay. And sometimes you might be offended, but that is how you become a more intellectually and personally resilient individual.
So we have some more questions coming into Twitter, so we'll get back to that soon. Something I wanted to talk about that's been surfacing in the past few days within the media is a similar situation surrounding Masuma Khan, a student at Dalhousie University who was disciplined for her harsh criticism on Canada 150 celebrations. The student is a member of Dalhousie Student Council Executive and was under investigation for standing with Indigenous individuals for allegedly discriminating against white people. Her situation in the media is being coined as being similar to yours, in that administration in a university are getting involved with the speech of individuals. However, various media outlets have criticized that she didn't enjoy a large amount of support, but instead backlash, in contrast to how this has rolled out for you. So what are your thoughts on this?
Right, yeah, this is something I tweeted about, and unfortunately a lot of people really misconstrued the argument. So I support that she can write whatever she wants on social media, because yes, it wasn't invoking physical harm on anybody, right? It wasn't hate speech. It was just rude and distasteful. I defend her right to do that, of course. But, you know, then that article, which was written in, I believe it was the Montreal Gazette, that said, oh, well, Masuma Khan didn't get as much support as Lindsay Shepherd. Well, you know, you at this, if you're asking about levels of popularity received after the incidents occurred, well, then you have to look at content and why has one person received, why is one person regarded as more appealing than the other? And, you know, Masuma Khan's comments, they were distasteful. They involved like a swear word. They had contempt, and yes, for a certain racial group, for white people. And of course, as you mentioned, you know, she was a student council member. And it does add an element. I don't know, like, the legalities and policies around that, but it does add an element of, like, Dalhousie was a university that chose not to celebrate Canada 150. And you have to think, with someone like Masuma Khan on that committee or what have you, that her comments probably influenced that. So, you know, that kind of thinking of, like, white tears and white fragility and no Canada 150, Canada's an awful place. That does end up influencing policy, which is why I think people were taken aback by her comments. But of course, yeah, she's allowed to say them. So that's not what I'm arguing. Of course, she can say it. But all I was doing was introducing two sides of an argument. So not many people can disagree with the fact that it's okay to talk about two sides of an argument.
Okay, so with that, how would you respond to the arguments that vocal supporters of free speech within your case are only so because it upholds their current beliefs, and Khan's statements challenge those beliefs?
The thing is, like, I think I've just been managing my public presence better than she did at the time. I don't even remember when her case came about, but, you know, I created this Twitter. I've been actively commenting on news articles, engaging with people, joined these organizers of this free speech rally. You know, I've been active in this. I've been thinking about policy change. I've been in many, many, many media interviews and television shows. So I'm actually passionate about talking about this. I don't recall her, I don't really recall seeing her anywhere. And I only found out, like, about her Twitter account after I read that article, like, you know, earlier in the week. So, it also has to do with how you manage yourself. So, and, you know, as I mentioned, I didn't see her trying to manage any kind of public presence.
I've heard you say in our last interview, in a couple of other articles, that you stated that all opinions are valid on numerous occasions. Can you expand on this? And stating that all opinions are valid, does this also invite hateful speech?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, sometimes when I hear, you know, my own voice saying that, like, in a university, all perspectives are valid. You know, a part of me thinks, yeah, it is kind of, that could be an ambiguous statement. But, you know, okay, let's say there was a resurgence of a flat earth movement, which apparently I heard there is. So people who believe the earth is flat. Many would say, or I mean, literally 99.999% of the population would say this is just not a valid perspective. But the thing is, let's say they're in the classroom and you have five flat earthers. Well, it's still interesting to talk about why they think that way. Why do they think the earth is flat? Why do they reject the science saying that the earth is round? Like, we need to understand why they think that way. How did they come to those conclusions in order to understand the society and that we live in?
Okay.
So yes, they can be weird opinions and hateful too, but you need to analyze them to understand them.
And is hateful speech valid then?
Again, I don't know the legalities of it, but I mean, you can't shy away from the fact that people do have hateful views, whether they will vocally say them or not. So I believe that in a university, you should be able to acknowledge that some people have hateful views, and it's not good to try to sweep that under the rug so that students feel more safe.
So when we first talked, you mentioned that you were unsure as to whether or not you'd be continuing at Laurier either this next semester or next year. Have you put any more thought into this?
It's really still at 50-50. Yeah, so of course, a part of me wants to stay to show that, you know, it's not okay that you just want to become this place of homogenous ideology where no one can have a different opinion, or even bring up a different opinion, bring up the fact that someone has a different opinion. So that's kind of, you know, the main argument of why I would stay. But on the other hand, it's, as I saw from the letter that the faculty signed last night, it's a rot that's happening, and I'm almost beginning to think, although I do believe that this is a problem among all Canadian university campuses and perhaps some in the US and other countries too, that there's this climate of political correctness. I'm almost beginning to believe that Wilfrid Laurier has some sort of even stronger particular problem with it, at least in the environment that I'm surrounded with. And yeah.
Okay, so we have a couple more Twitter questions here, so we'll go over to those. Question here, what's an example of a substantial reform that Lindsay thinks would protect freedom of expression moving forward?
I'll just go back to what I said before about the Chicago statement.
Another question here, how do you expect trans students to feel safe in your classroom in the future?
It's a bit of an odd question. Like, are they suggesting I currently have trans students, or are they suggesting that I will have trans students in the future?
Well, we can even say the individual or individuals who complained. How do you expect them to feel safe in your classroom then?
Right. But some of the thing is, like, just because someone said they, just because someone sent off that what I assume to be an email to Professor Rambukana saying they were unhappy with the content of that Steve Paikin video. There's also this culture of protect other people from being offended. So even if I wasn't directly offended, someone else might be. So that's good enough to complain about it because someone else might be. And that's going too far.
So then you would be okay with having a similar conversation, knowing now that there may be someone in your tutorials who might feel harm or may not feel safe discussing these things?
Well, I mean, again, I'm not allowed to bring any controversial materials into my tutorials anymore, so that occasion wouldn't even arise. And also, I don't believe in treating trans students like babies. I believe they deserve the same respect as everyone else does. So I don't know why everyone just wants me to treat them like they need special protection. Again, that's insulting.
Okay, we have another question here. It says, who is safe, in quotes, to be open about this, and who isn't? Might be referring to a comment you made earlier.
Sorry, I'm not under... I don't...
So who's safe to be open about this? I think they're referring to who's safe to be open in terms of talking about this situation. Who is safe to be talking about freedom of expression, and who might not be?
Everyone is safe to talk about it, and that's why even at our free speech rally on Friday, they had their counter-protest, and it was fine. And, you know, the reason that they can counter-protest is because we have freedom of expression.
Okay. Another question. Why shouldn't students expect to be respected in the classroom? Do you understand the difference between offending someone and perpetrating systemic violence?
Well, first of all, I mean, that's a loaded question. So if you take a research methods course, that's actually not the kind of question you would ask. So that being said, do you want to repeat it? And I'll try my best to respond and kind of avoid that loaded question.
Okay, so again, why shouldn't students expect to be respected in the classroom? First part.
Well, quickly, I respect them by treating them like they are able to critically think and that they are mature and intelligent people who want to engage with current societal topics. I can't think of anything more respectful than that. And that's a respect that Rambukkana and Pimlott wouldn't give them.
Okay, second part. Do you understand the difference between offending someone and perpetrating systemic violence?
Oh, I thought I understood that, but seeing as the authoritarian left has kind of hijacked those definitions, I can't really comment on those definitions because they're just so so different from what everyone else understands now.
So we'll take a bit of a break from Twitter again. What are your thoughts on the support you've received from politicians? Michael Harris was present at the rally this past Friday. Conservative leader Andrew Scheer asked in the House of Commons, will the Prime Minister join me in condemning the crackdown on free speech at Laurier University? What are your thoughts on this?
You know, I'm not a conservative, and I don't think I ever will be. You know, I mean, I don't vote to their party, but I appreciate their support. And, you know, when you go through situations like this, you realize you have allies in places that you might not have realized, and you have common ground on certain issues, even though you may disagree on everything else. And so, you know, I made it quite clear that I'm not interested in becoming some sort of right-wing advocate, even though some people are calling me even alt-right now. I like that I have common ground with those people, and that even though we're different politically, they're willing to stand up for me. And I'm glad that it was brought up in Parliament. And I think it's interesting that the Liberal Party wouldn't condemn what happened.
So let's talk a bit about the protest that happened this past Friday. How do you think that it went? What kind of impact did you think that it made?
Well, the impact is it unified people. And I talked to so many people who drove down from, you know, Toronto, like who are from Ryerson or York. And they drove down like just to come to the rally. And I think that's awesome. And it unified. And even the counter-protesters across the street who were lined up there, even to see them there, it was almost like kind of unifying because they were also expressing their right of freedom of expression.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of impact do you think that the silent protesters made?
I got their point that, like, they feel silent, so they decided to be silent. Kind of an interesting approach. I'm glad that they also are showing solidarity, but that being said, they are hijacking the issue and they are alienating members of their own community by acting as if being trans is counter to free speech. It's really doing a disservice to them.
In the past week, the Rainbow Center, along with other individuals in the Laurier community, they've received a lot of, or I guess, trans and non-binary folk on the Laurier campus, I should specify. They've received a lot of hate, a lot of backlash, a lot of really angry emails, messages on Twitter and Facebook. What do you think about this? Obviously, some of the messages that they've been receiving are really hateful.
It's hard for me to comment when I don't know. Like, I didn't receive those emails. I don't know what they say. And, you know, if you're going to make a claim that, because, you know, the Faculty Association, I think that's what they are. They're making that claim that there's been an upshot in attacks and harm and violence against trans people. Okay, well, you need to qualify that. You need to explain that and give specifics, or else no one knows how to respond to that. Especially if you're going to define harm as playing a TVO debate. Well, then we don't even know what harm really means anymore. And is it something that we need to, you know, call the police about, right? Yeah.
And I mean, regardless of what the hate is, I think the fact that they're receiving hate, do you think that that's acceptable regarding the situation that's come up from your tutorial?
Well, the thing is, this is what I think. It's not because they're trans. They're not receiving these messages because they're trans. They're receiving them because they've made their position that they're anti-free speech and anti-freedom of expression. And like I said, that's the fault of the Rainbow Center for claiming to speak for all of them. And that's, you know, that's what happens when you kind of value a group identity, I suppose. So I think, although they're trying to twist this as though this is transphobia reborn, it's actually just, hey, like, why do you guys think that freedom of expression is counter to being trans? Like, why would you endorse what happened to Lindsay in that meeting?
I just wanted to talk about the tutorial in specific, the discussion which happened after you showed the Jordan Peterson video. How did you moderate this discussion? What kind of took place after the video was shown?
Yeah, so it wasn't so much about the politics of Bill C-16 because, again, like, this is not a political science class. I don't even, until this happened, I didn't even know the specifics of Bill C-16. I probably still don't. Well, no one does. And so we were talking about language and how something like seemingly innocuous as grammar and pronouns actually can be a current societal topic. And so people were talking about how, you know, I mean, we were talking about these genderless pronouns are going to be implemented. So why is there resistance? You know, and people were asking questions, you know, reflectively, like, how does language change? Why, you know, why don't we speak in Shakespearean language anymore? Is it really, you know, some people were saying, is it really that hard to just use the pronouns? Is it really that hard to memorize the pronouns? So it was just about the larger issues of language use. And then we brought it back down to the technical side of, you know, constructing sentences genderlessly and using they in the singular, because there's a section in our book that talks about when you can use they in the singular and when you can't.
Well, I think that's all the questions that I have for you. Is there anything else that you wanted to add before we end?
No, I think that's everything.
That's everything? Okay, great. Well, That's all we have for questions. So I'd like to thank Lindsay for speaking with us on air this morning. And we'd also like to thank those who contributed their questions via social media. My name is Safina Hussein, news director for The Cord, and thank you for tuning in to RadioLaurier.com.